Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 33 of Pepperdine People. I'm Don Marshall. I'm Fletcher Jones Chair of Great Books at Seaver College. I'm talking with Jason Chanos, who teaches acting in the Fine Arts Division and is directing a production of Samuel Beckett's classic work Waiting for Godot on campus this spring. This play really marked an epoch in theatrical history. It's been immensely influential, not just on playwrights, but for all kinds of artists, visual artists, musicians, and many others. It was first produced in Paris in 1952, and then in London in 1955, and in Miami and then New York in 1956. And even after 50 years, it remains puzzling yet compelling, bleak but funny, provocative and mysterious. The play shows two tramps on the road in a barren landscape with a single tree. They're joined by a self-satisfied master driving his slave and carrier. The tramps are waiting for Godot, they say, and at the end of each of the two acts, a boy arrives to say Godot won't be coming today, but surely tomorrow. Beckett seems to be creating a stripped-down metaphor for a pretty bleak view of the human condition. Jason, what do you think there is about this very minimalist, this seemingly bleak play that has kept acting companies and theater audiences coming back to it for more than 50 years?
It's not anchored in any specific time, about any specific person or any specific place. It's set in the theater of the absurd genre. So it's universal, or it's designed to be universal, to mean a lot of things for a lot of different people. And the focus of what the story is something that humans have done their entire existence and will continue to do, which is wait for better things, the expectation of a greater life, of something that's going to fulfill them professionally or emotionally or spiritually. So I think it not only has lasted for 50 years, but could go on to last 50 more.
I understand that. And if you describe the play, it sounds kind of bleak and barren.
Yes,
but
it
the
does.
Actual experience is something different from that. It turns out to be strangely funny and kind of exciting and attractive. It's a real opportunity for a tour de force by actors, partly because Beckett gets out of their way, gives them very minimal lines, and then they can bring something to this, and the audience has to listen and make something out of it.
When I read it, because I certainly read it before I ever saw it or even performed it as an actor, and I didn't get it. I didn't get it on the page. But and then after seeing it, yeah, you're right. There's a lot between the lines. There's flushing that out has been a rather rewarding challenge, but a challenge nonetheless.
Excellent. There was a famous production of this in San Quentin, and they kind of used that prison setting to add some force to Beckett's metaphor of life as waiting for some savior to arrive who never comes, waiting in a kind of bleak environment, minimal environment. Have you found ways to try to get the play's power to grip audiences at Pepperdine?
The concept that we're using is very theatrical. I think to make it more than just a play but something – make it entertainment. I think once I can grab people's attention to it as visually, as a spectacle, then they can kind of relax a little bit and listen to the message. The message I think would probably resonate on the ears of college students a little differently than it would if it was playing anywhere, mostly because when people are in college and people decide to pursue higher education, I think that they have a lot of the same ideas swirling around inside them that our two tramp clowns have in the play. You know, what's life going to be based on the efforts that I'm making right now? And is there any guarantee that I'm going to make a difference based on these efforts? So I'm trying to make it bold and entertaining and seeing if maybe that will draw them into the message, which I think is just there all by itself.
That really resonates for me. If there's any time of life when people spend a lot of time just waiting for something to happen, it's being a teenager, being an adolescent, being a young person.
Absolutely.
You spend an enormous amount of time waiting for your friends to arrive, waiting for something to happen, driving up and down the street, hoping to see someone, hoping that some person will come into your life and give it meaning.
Waiting for someone to call.
Right.
Waiting for, yeah. You spend, now I think about it, you probably spend 30 your life just waiting for something to happen.
Absolutely. You know, the central characters in this play, the tramps, Estragon and Vladimir, or Vladimir, seem to me like one of the great old comic duos. They make me think of Laurel and Hardy. They even have bowler hats and sort of shabby clothes. How do you see these two characters' relationship through the course of the play?
Laurel and Hardy is a good comparison. We also were exploring Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton and some of the routines they're doing on the stage, because we know that when Beckett was studying at Trinity that he had opportunities to see those American silent films that had the Charlie Chaplin. We think that those silent films had an influence on this, on him writing this play. In terms of their relationship, you know, I did a lot of research on these two guys, and what I found most compelling was the idea that they're two halves of the same whole, that Vladimir represents the more intellectual side of someone's personality, and Estragon's the more primal. He's interested in food and sleep and the things that are, essential towards somebody's existence. And Vladimir he's caught up in ambition and what's to come and future and past, and how can he manipulate the circumstances around him to change the circumstances that they're currently in. So two halves of the same whole is what I was going with.
That's really interesting. At the beginning of the play, Vladimir is struggling to get his boot off.
Mm-hmm.
He can't quite get it off, and he struggles with it. And Estragon takes his hat off and looks inside it. It did strike me. Here's the hat and the boot, the head and the
foot. And feet.
That they're really connected. Even though they talk about separating, maybe we'd be better off not together. And they say, let's separate. In fact, they never do.
Right.
They really seem to be closely connected. I've heard critics describe them as like a bickering old couple, who've been married for a long time, and they continue to bicker, and they seem kind of unhappy, but in fact, they're very close. They're very close to each other.
It's comfort with misery.
Yeah. It seems to me it's a surprisingly kind of rich portrait of friendship, if you really think about it, all the different sides and aspects of people who've been friends for a long time.
Oh, yeah. So, and I think when you dig for it, as we have, you find every shade of color of a relationship with these two.
There's a lot of verbal wit in the play. I sometimes play for students who's on first, if you know the Abbott and Costello routine.
Sure.
There are a lot of kind of verbal exchanges that are kind of these ping pong games of batting words back and forth. And they can just be a lot of fun in the theater. I think it's, again, as you say, very theatrical. It's a very gripping kind of theatrical device. Well, the other two characters in the play are this very smug master, Pozzo, and his badly abused servant, Lucky. How do you think they fit into the overall theme of the play?
Well, I I took the same route with them as well. However, I saw them as extremes of what the other two are. Pozzo perhaps didn't follow the route of bettering himself through intellect and through knowledge. Instead, he kind of chases after what is immediately satisfying. So he always represented a sort of a greedy capitalist for me, mm-hmm. that was only interested in power and an ego. And then his alter ego is Lucky, who obviously is dying and withering on the vine because he never gets utilized. So all he does is carry the baggage until he's asked to think. And when he finally does get a chance to think, it comes out as a muddy, metal mask because it hasn't had time to develop.
Well, if Estragon and Vladimir have a kind of equal relationship, Pozzo and lucky have obviously an unequal relationship, and I think that's given opportunity to a lot of people with political interests to try to read this theme of politics into the play and to see this as somehow about oppression and about the forms it takes and the distortions of human connections when there's inequality and abuse going on. So
you can
try
kind
to find justice there.
You can pick how you want to see the show and find evidence all throughout it to support that. And there is a lot of different shades that you can experiment. As you said, political is you can see evidence everywhere of that.
To a certain extent, we're in the theater waiting for something to happen, and we begin to try to make something out of what we see.
I know.
And sometimes what we make out of it works well and fits with the play, and sometimes you try it and it doesn't seem to quite work out. But there it is.
Yeah, Beckett is kind of winking at his audience when he's making them wait to see a play about waiting.
Yes.
The joke's on us.
Absolutely. Pepperdine is a Christian college. Do you think audiences here may hear the play from that perspective?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
What do you think there are things in it that are maybe particularly resonant for a Christian audience and things that might be challenging for a Christian audience? Both ways.
Well, they're wrangling with what they need to do to be rescued from the situation they're in. And some of the avenues they explore are direct in line with Christianity and references from the Gospels. So it's hard to miss those references. I think what would be challenging is that Beckett doesn't tie it up with a bow at the end. In fact, it almost is left with a certain uncertainty. But, you know, you said something the other day that I think was kind of delightful about doubt. I hope you get a chance. I hope you talk about that for
a
second.
You know, I think so. Beckett certainly knew Dante. He knew the Christian tradition very well. And this image of our life as a journey, we're on the road. We're not where we should be. We're not at home. We're waiting to get home. We're waiting for a savior to arrive. This is a very deep kind of Christian theme and sort of reflects on the one hand appreciation for the world that God has given us and on the other hand a kind of dissatisfaction with the world, a kind of sense that it's not enough for us. We want something more, something that we don't quite find, not in this life anyway. And I think that for a Christian, there certainly have been religious people who have found this play very resonant. Okay? It's true that it doesn't give an answer at the end. It doesn't give a comforting and reassuring answer at the end. The only comfort is that they're still waiting. You know, there's still some fidelity there.
But, yeah, that's true.
But, you know, Pope Benedict has remarked that the opposite of faith is not doubt. It's infidelity. It's faithlessness. And that actually faith and doubt are part of the same experience for anyone who's spiritual. If you don't have moments of doubt, you probably just don't understand what Christianity is asking of you. You know, it's going to be a difficult thing.
So from that perspective, I think it will be viewed with, you know, a certain kind of understanding. It won't be scary. But if you don't have that view yet,
yes.
if you're still developing your view, the show, I think, will rattle your cage.
It can be very unsettling. I know. The characters in the play are old and decrepit. Has it been a challenge to stage the play with young actors and with an audience? It's going to be largely students.
Yeah, it has. Well, it was something that we knew was going to be part of the process all along. I think what I've done to, I guess, neutralize, for lack of a better word, that idea is by making them clowns. They've always been clowns, old vaudeville act of clowns, but never literal clowns, and we're making them literal clowns. Going back in just my experience with clowning, clowns, at least the art form of clowning, has always been they've been representatives of humanity. They experience a full range of emotion, but they just don't have an identity that's tied to any one type of person. And since our actors are young with young voices and haven't experienced the lives that their characters talk about, by making them clowns, they can be anything.
I think that's wonderful. I'm kind of interested in that tradition. In a way, the clown is a descendant all the way from the fool figures in Shakespeare, who are at once funny and serious. They're at once absurd and a little crazy, but on the other hand, they have deep insights into the human condition and the human reality.
Well, yeah. Fools, going back to the royalty, they had almost a protection from the things they say. They were protected, so they could mock and comment and hold a mirror up to royalty as they please without any threat of their life. Yeah, you're right. I think it's of the same tradition.
It's a tradition that I hope young people know something about. I had, since I'm a lot older, I got to see Red Skelton when he was on television, one of the last great kind of vaudeville clowns.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the wonderful pictures of Emmett Kelly, who was a very famous clown when I was young. And he was the clown with the sad face. He was mm-hmm. the weeping clown.
Mm-hmm.
Beckett called this play a tragicomedy. Some people find the play bleak. Some find it hilariously funny. It seems to go both ways. How do you see the ultimate tone and vision of life that this play is presenting?
Oh, gosh. I have tried not to interfere too much with how my actors are interpreting what they're saying and allowed them to just follow the sort of the line of breadcrumbs that Beckett has laid out. And at times they have found great humor in it, and at other times tragic, deep and highly emotional moments in the show. And I've tried to just – because so much of acting is about the performer sort of exposing their artistic soul to, you know, their interpretation of what's going on, and that I try to take what they have and shape it. And so I'm sort of at the mercy at what the personalities and what kind of lightness or darkness my performers have. And I would say that in comparison to a production I recently saw across town, we're taking a little bit of a darker, maybe deeper tone with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I may have strayed from path a little bit on that question. Mm-hmm. What was the original question? I don't remember.
I'm trying to think about what one finally takes away from the play, what kind of vision of human life one takes away. For one thing, I think it's just very complicated. I love Greek drama. I'm fascinated by it. I'm really interested in it. And what Greek drama produces is real concentration. They're short plays. They're very intense. They're very concentrated. So they're very internally consistent, and their tone is often very consistent.
Oh, yeah.
Modern audiences can find this quite relentless, but it's very clear what's going on. Life is a little different from that, and to discover that everyday life has a complex mix of funny, absurd, crazy moments, of moments of profound sorrow, moments of nostalgia, moments of hope, that all of these mixed emotions come, and then finding a way to present this in a play that isn't bound to a particular set of people or circumstances, and can open itself for an audience, I think is quite an achievement. So I don't quite want him to tie it up at the end and have a happy ending or a sad ending. I don't want to know whether Godot is going to come or not going to come. I want it left suspended and open with the openness of life itself. So.
Well, I hope to give that to you.
Good. Well, I'm certainly looking.
I may have to go tweak it.
I'm certainly looking forward to it. I've seen many productions of this play, in fact, and just because it's so stripped down, the director seems to have less room to bring something to the play than with a Shakespeare play, where he can move it from the Renaissance to the 1930s, or he can put them in Victorian costume, or he can move it to India, or he can do all kinds of strange. He can stage it with trapezes. I've seen A Midsummer Night's Dream where the actors were on trapezes. Okay? Mm-hmm. They do all kinds of things with Shakespeare. Okay? Has this been inhibiting for you as a director to feel that this play kind of directs itself? There's not too much you can do with it.
Since the dialogue is so, as you say, stripped down, since there is absolutely nothing on the set, the focus has shifted away from dialogue and into movement.
So the challenge, there's still a lot of work for me to do, but it's shaping all the specific little moments of how they move, because not only are we dealing with old vaudevillian clowns on a thrust stage, so we've got audiences on three sides of us, but we're trying not to move until we have to. And so, like I said, I don't feel inhibited because my time has been spent in someplace different. And as always is the case with any play, what audiences relate to first and foremost is the relationship of two characters. Even though this is these characters are not specific to any one person, their relationship is what is relatable. In fact, it might be the only thing that's relatable because everything else is, surrealistic. Mm-hmm. So it's been back to the basics with making sure that those relationships and all the little ups and downs and things we talked about earlier are coming across.
You know, I happen to love theater, but I think a play like this, maybe even more than a Shakespeare play. There are people who said Shakespeare plays are so complex they can't be represented on stage. But a play like this really needs to be seen. I hope people will come and see the production because there is just no substitute for having a live human being in front of you connecting with another live human being. I've seen tapes of productions, of films of production, and anything on a DVD, anything on a video just does not have anything like the force and the power of a live performance with real actors in front of you.
Well, there's something that happens with watching a live performance. You get a you can feel the emotion and it affects you, and you don't get that when you're watching it on TV.
Exactly. And since this is not a play about spectacle, it really is about these emotional relations between the characters. You really are down to that, and you really feel that in a live performance in a way it's hard to feel when you have a medium that distances you from the actors. So I think it's just I think that's another thing that's been attractive about it. It's just a great theatrical experience to sit through this.
Going back to your first question, I think as long as theater's around, this play will last because it's a great live performance piece.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Jason. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
Again, my name's Don Marshall, and I've been talking to Jason Chanos. We are colleagues in Seaver College in Pepperdine University, and thanks for listening.